Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency again is supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio. And Ryan, I know that you are an avid hunter. You love to get out in the deer stand. And, you know, many people have to go and trek a long ways, and they might have an ATV. It is important that people have insurance for that ATV. Maybe there's a snowmobile. Obviously, there are cars and homes. And you know what? An independent insurance agent can help you get the best bundled coverage that you might need from a number of different providers.
Correct. And that's where if you're talking about toys like Luke is talking about with an ATV, snowmobile, whether it's your car, now that we're getting into late October, early November, and you got the deer running around and you want to make sure, if I hit one, I don't want to make sure that things are going to go sideways for me really quickly. And well, that's where the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, Bill Burns, believes in service. I've said it before. You've heard me say it 100 times. Their goal is not to be the biggest insurance agency in the world. They want to be the best. They want to be able to put you and your needs first. They're local. They're Minnesota people. I've told this story a couple times already, but I was out on Oak Street before one of the Gopher games here this season. Austin came up to me, said, "Hey, I switched to the Burns Insurance Agency. Save $700. I can assure you, again, this is just mom and pop stuff. Again, independent insurance agent gets access to over 20 different insurance companies, gets you the best coverage at the best price today. So if you want to check them out, go to insurancebyburns.com or email him directly, bill@insurancebyburns.com.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to Gopher Football is Good Again? Edition. As your Golden Gophers absolutely lay the boom on the Maryland Terrapins. Some would say, Luke, that they may have been trampled by turtles.
Oh.
Do you like that little Minnesota reference?
Yeah, I got that. Wow, that was good.
In a 48-23 victory, one that Minnesota finally came out fast. They accelerated in the middle. I don't know that they finished strong, and we'll talk about everybody's favorite topic of PJ Fleck leaving the starters into the fourth quarter. But joining us, as always, is my second cousin, the founder of DinkyTownAthletes.com, which maybe they have something going on this week. And former Golden Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns. Derek, how is the sweltering heat of Florida, you old man?
It's pretty good, guys, and was fun to see a good convincing win on homecoming, and good to see texts and tweets from fellow alumni who made it out to the game. So all in all, just a great day for the University of Minnesota.
All right, so let's talk about this 48-23 victory. Guys, I can't remember a game in recent memory where it was very clear, basically within the end of the first quarter almost, that the Gophers likely were going to be the victor. And it was almost, it wasn't stress-free watching, but it was almost stress-free watching, right? Brosmer with a season-high 4 touchdown passes, finally eclipses the 300-yard mark. Ryan, absolutely, you deserve some credit for calling that out in our preview episode. All in all, I mean,
Don't sound too excited to give me my flowers, Luke Buer. I hear the disdain in your voice. It's too early in the morning.
I just
want to hear a little bit of genuine. Come on. Now,
I'm just salty that the Gophers literally covered the over under on their own when I took the under. So that's really where that disdain is coming from. But yeah, I mean, all in all, great. I think if you didn't listen to the preview, this is your heads up that you should listen to the previews, because Ryan said if the Gophers are going to win this game, they're going to have to have success throwing the ball, because this was the weakness of Maryland. And I think it's important to note, like, we are seeing some changes under this PJ Fleck-led staff. And those changes would be, hey, we're going to exploit something that a team does really poorly, in part maybe because we don't run the ball as well, but also in part because that's their weakness, and we're going to take what the defense can give us. So on the day, you know, Max Brosmer ends up 26 of 33 for 320 yards and four touchdowns. And he threw some absolute dimes, Derek. But I want you to comment just maybe more, start more as you usually do schematically. What were the Gophers doing, you know, in the passing game that allowed them to have success?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, and there's a lot of positive things to say about the Gopher offense, but I just wanted to get out of the way. Pass coverage from Maryland was dreadful.
Not good.
So that accounted for some of this. And again, don't want to take any credit away, but they really struggled, really zone and man. But getting to the schematics, Maryland was, they wanted to play man coverage. I think that in chatting in our group chat during the game, I think Maryland had watched enough tape passing wise to know that Max Brosmer coming into the game had had a lot of success against zone. They didn't feel like that was a good matchup to stay in zone. And in some third and longs where they did go zone, it also didn't go well, but they tried to play man coverage, but Minnesota was ready for it. And this was Max Brosmer and Greg Harbaugh, basically a clinic in man beating routes and concepts. And, you know, we texted midway through the first or second quarter that they just weren't able to cover Daniel Jackson man coverage. So I think what you're going to see going forward is that if teams are going to elect to try and stop Minnesota's passing game by running man, they're going to go right to Daniel Jackson. And unless you bracket him or double him, in which case they're going to go to the running back or one of the other receivers, that's going to be the response. So that was Maryland's approach in the pass game, and Minnesota, again, couldn't have had a better answer for it, whether it was shallow crosses, over routes, stop routes, hitches, things like that. Basically, everything worked, and that was in large part due to the progressions from Max and great game out of the receiver core.
Well, speaking of the receiving core, Daniel Jackson, 9 receptions, 117 yards, 2 touchdowns. Elijah Spencer, 6 receptions for 99 yards and 2 touchdowns. I will say this, if Elijah Spencer would have gained one more yard to cross the century mark, that would have marked the first game the Gophers have had 2 100-yard receivers since. You may have heard of these two players, Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson in 2019.
Wow.
But that's the type of day that it was for Brosmer in this passing offense. I just, before I wax poetically about Brosmer, I can't say enough good things at this point. And if you don't want to give Greg Harbaugh his flowers at this point, it's because you just don't like him. Oh, which I don't understand why you wouldn't.
Can I just wholly endorse this for a second? Like, I think often when the offense doesn't have success, people say that it's play calling. But during his entire duration, I thought that he has been an excellent play caller. And this is just another, and arguably, this is the only time we've seen in this season where they've embraced the pass. And Ryan, you're so right. He deserves credit for this.
Well, that's where last year, look at the changes they've made. In year one, as Harbaugh is the coordinator, Ethan Kaliak-Manis is the quarterback. That offense last year was not any good. They were incredibly inconsistent. You didn't know what you're going to get game to game, series to series, God forbid, play to play. So what do they do in between year one and year two for Harbaugh? He goes out and grabs Max Brosmer from the portal. They're able to adapt the offense to Brosmer's skill set, which what is the number one thing Max Brosmer does so well? Well, the microbiologist is incredibly, incredibly good with his processor. He's able to get through reads, which we haven't been able to talk about a Gopher quarterback in the years of this podcast, being able to process off of his first read to his second read, let alone this is now back-to-back games where the quarterback has thrown touchdown passes on his fifth read. I'll remind you, the game-winning touchdown to Darius Taylor against UCLA, he was the fifth read on that. They went right to left, and just because Darius Taylor snuck out, Brosmer sees him, hits him in stride, touchdown. Think about the Elijah Spencer first touchdown. I tweeted out a screenshot of it. You can go to Gopher Illustrated, see it in the GIF rewind too, where he releases that football off of his back foot is ridiculous. The fact that that actually gets to a spot where a Spencer can go grab it and have it come down. I mean, he is on an absolute heater, but to go back to the Harbaugh point, I mean, they're tailoring an offense to exactly what Brosmer does well. Why do you think Minnesota has done more shifts and motions than any other of my 13 years now covering this team. I've never seen a Gopher offense use as many shifts and motions. Why? Because Brosmer knows why they're doing that. They're trying to get the defense to show them, is it man? Is it zone? Okay, well, if I shift this guy this way, what happens on the opposite side as a, you know, as a reaction to that? Brosmer understands that. Now, to Derek's point, Maryland refused to get beat in zone coverage, which I don't blame them. Brosmer has been very good about finding the soft spots, so is his pass catchers. But I sent that text about halfway through the second quarter. At some point, Maryland had to adapt because they were getting obliterated in man coverage. I even think about Elijah Spencer's second touchdown. Why is Elijah Spencer wide open 30 yards down the field? Harbaugh goes to trips. He knows it's man. They do a little bit of a motion. And the Maryland defensive backs, because they're in man, get all types of tripped up on the route combination. Elijah is able to leak out free on essentially like a wheel route type of concept, and he's wide open. Again, not bad for the lowest paid offensive coordinator in the Big Ten, by the way. I'm not here to tell you he's Sean McVay. He's not Sean McVay. But he is someone that is innovating an offense with a FCS quarterback who, by the way, is playing out of his mind. If Brosmer continues to play like this, we're going to be talking about him playing on Sundays. And that's where I hate to make comps, but I talked about it on Gopher Football Sunday this morning with Guardsy and Luke. Well, I'll throw it to Derek first. Derek, I don't know how much of the NFL you watch. I don't get to watch a ton of it because my Sundays are filled with work stuff. But to me, if you're going to comp Max Brosmer to an NFL quarterback, now, I'm not saying this is who he is. I'm not saying he's going to have a 10-year NFL career. I think there's a lot of Jared Goff in Max Brosmer. And there, you look at the arc for Jared Goff where number one overall pick, great. But it wasn't great for him with the Rams, and he really took off with Ben Johnson in that Lions offense. Well, clearly, the step up early from FCS to Big Ten was a little bit of a transition, and he has just gotten better and better and better since that second half of the Michigan game. I don't know what else to say about Brosmer at this point, Derek, but is the Jared Goff type of similarity something you agree with, disagree with, or how much of a moron am I?
No, I agree. And that was, I was going to add, you're spot on in that he's getting better. And better is, I would also just add, more comfortable. Amazing how comfortable he looked in the game versus Maryland versus, let's say, that first game against North Carolina, where he was jittery, and he was, which is understandable, by the way. It's not a, I guess, that's something that we can expect going to power two, power four football. That, and he's had a couple quarters here and there where, you know, he's gone back to being a little bit shaky, but this is a complete game of, not only was the execution there, the play calling was great, but just his comfort level and being able to read. And, you know, just to break down a couple of those plays real quickly, you mentioned the first Elijah Spencer touchdown. The way he threw, the trajectory of that ball, which is kind of a floater to the corner, that's actually a dangerous throw, but he knew that he could do it because he had read the safety in his first or second progression was not going to be in that corner, and he knew that Elijah was one of his last progressions. So the minute he saw the safety stay up, he knew he could float that ball to the corner of the end zone. And so just a great mental rep, and of course a good ball as well. And, you know, his ability to read things like that. And then the bunch route that you mentioned, also wheel route concept of that. That's why you run a bunch route versus man coverage, because you have, in that case, four defensive backs trying to sort through three of those receivers. You have the safety think they're going to switch. He doesn't. And guy opens up, you know, deep, and Max, of course, sees it right away. So, mentally, he's comfortable. He's going through his progressions. He's making the right reads, and he's throwing accurately. And I think that that also has been something that he's taken on, being able to his accuracy as comfort level, being able to hit. And just when he's on, I mean, you and I have talked about it. There were a couple plays to Daniel Jackson where the coverage is good. Daniel runs a great route, and the ball is just placed where it's really, really, really hard to defend that where, I mean, it's Daniel's good 50-50 ball catcher. And when Max just puts it right, the catch radius just right where it needs to be, that's something that I had said last week was look for that to be a sustainable asset. Games change depending on the team and the personnel week to week. That's not going to change. If they're able to complete those passes when he's essentially covered, you're going to be able to get a first down when you need it on a hitch route and, you know, third and five, be able to hit him in man coverage. And that's going to just, I think, continue to be something they're going to rely on.
Before you go, Luke, I do want to add to that point. Max Brosmer yesterday on passes of 10 or more yards down the field was 11 of 16 for 201 yards and two touchdowns. Seems pretty good, but what do I know?
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting, guys, too, as we wax poetically about Max Brosmer, this is kind of emblematic of the era that we're in, right? Some people are starting to call it the players era with the transfer portal and NIL. One of the things that you as a staff or a university or athletic department have to be able to do is be able to find good fits as players are trying to move into a better situation for themselves, something that I fully endorse. And I just want to note that, you know, Max Brosmer is here because he was identified by this staff, filling a need that the Gophers had at the quarterback position. But, you know, that probably isn't possible if it isn't for, you know, the work by like Dinkytown athletes and stuff like that. So I know, Derek, you guys have a match campaign going, but can you just speak to, you know, the important role that you guys play right now in being able to help support and bring athletes here, but also, you know, support the athletes that are here?
Yeah. So on the NIL side, this is the time of year that we're in the mode of fundraising for, you know, the portal opens in a few weeks. It's retention time for the athletes that you want to keep on the team. And then it's, of course, go into the portal when that opens and try to attract more talent. And NIL is a big piece of that. I know people tend to think, because we live in a world that's very binary, that NIL is the only thing. It's not the only thing, but it's definitely, and Ryan will tell you, being closer to recruiting than I am, it is a major now competitive pillar in recruiting and retention. So we're in fundraising mode. We're excited to announce a match campaign now through November 10th. If you, all new memberships, upgraded memberships, and one-time donations supporting football and volleyball will be matched one-to-one. So it's a good jump start to this fundraising period. And the money that is brought in to support football will be used to retain the talent that we want to retain and then go out in the portal and hopefully attract some more for next year or start building next year's team.
Derek, I have a couple of questions for you that I've already had to answer, but I'm sure many of our listeners have the same one. So first question for you is, how are you guys defining upgraded memberships? Is it just one who gives monthly, or do they have to up to a new membership level? How do you guys define it?
Yep. So it's, you going up a level in membership or switching to from a monthly to an annual membership. So essentially, if you look at the income, what comes in between now and November 10th, anything that's increased over what your normal giving level would be is doubled.
And any one-time donation to football or volleyball is matched, correct?
Yes, correct. So if you're, we've had several people that graciously are current members and they're saying, you know, I may not be able to jump up a level, but can I do a one-time donation of $10, $50, $100? Yes, that is also matched. One-time donations in support of football or volleyball before November 10th are matched.
But Derek, why only volleyball alongside football and not basketball or hockey?
Yeah, so you're hitting them. We've gotten these same questions, Ryan. I think we're getting the same feedback. So this is strategic. This is timing wise. So the fact that we're not including other sports in other seasons is not because we're leaving them out or because we don't have support for them. This is in anticipation of, again, recruiting and retention period for fall sports. So we know that this is the fundraiser. This has become somewhat cyclical, in that this is the time of year we need to raise money for fall sports. And so that's why we've chosen, and that's where the support is on the match right now, is football and volleyball. We're not overlooking or forgetting about those winter sports. It's just the timing of the portal.
Last one I'll have for you before I go off a little bit is, Derek, what would you say to the people who sit there and say, I only got $5 to give. I only got $50 to give. Is that really going to make an impact?
You know, believe it or not, we didn't plan these questions out in advance, I swear. So, but I'm really glad you asked that, because I was, that was going to be a point I was going to make if you didn't ask it, frankly, is I think we get really caught up in NIL in trying to figure out how to get a small number of people or companies to donate a large amount of money. And look, if I had a magic wand, that would be wonderful. That's where we'd go, is we'd find two or three wealthy individuals to bankroll our NIL, or find, you know, one or two companies, which we have found one that stepped up big time. But I think there's too much of a focus on that. I think that success for Minnesota in the program that we have, I'm very convinced, is going to be based on large groups of people being involved at any level. And it truly does. It's not a cliche. It's getting a large number of people to become active in this space, that is providing a contribution, becoming a member, that's going to win for us. It doesn't matter if it's a $10 a month membership or $25 a month membership or a small one-time donation. It really doesn't, because we know, in looking at the market and the size of the fan base, that the numbers are there to do it that way. And so that was going to be a point I was going to make, and I'm glad you brought it up.
You know, it's funny, I can hit all the hits for you here. It's almost like you and I have a lot of the same demographic. But I'll say the thing that I don't want to put you in a tough spot is the number one thing I've heard from fans as a member of the media is, well, Ryan, how come the NIL collective, like Dinkytown Athletes, can't get these Minnesota companies to step up? I would support them if they're able to do that. All right, well, here's the biggest opportunity you've had. Dinkytown Athletes gets $1 million match led by a Minnesota company, a Gopher alum, to match up to $1 million. And to Derek's point he made earlier, portal season is somehow only 6 weeks away, which my anxiety level is now rising just to be able to take the amount of phone calls and text messages to try and deal with all that in December. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. If you want Minnesota to be able to attack the portal, and I think about this 2025 team that's going to need some receivers with Daniel Jackson and Elijah Spencer leaving, they're going to need some defensive linemen with Jod Joyner and Danny Strigow gone. Or if you want to play a part in retaining players like, I don't know, Darius Taylor, Coy Parrish, Cody Lindenberg, Devin Eastern, among others, I think Derek would tell you that you don't have to be the highest one in the room anymore. Now, if somebody gets stupid money or something like that, that's a whole different scenario. But if in this day and age, even with revenue sharing coming, now it's not here yet, but it is coming, your $5 or your $50 or whatever you can give is going to be matched. And if you want more, I think the larger point here, if you want more big companies to step up for your Gophers, here's the biggest opportunity for Derek and his staff to then go to other Fortune 500s or just big companies in general and say, here is the type of success that we had. We'd love to replicate that with you. Because this needs to be a success if things are going to continue to move forward. So as I get off my soapbox here, to Luke's initial point, Max Brosmer isn't here without NIL. Now, I think, Derek, I don't know if you feel comfortable saying this, but I will. I can assure you Minnesota was not the top school in NIL for Max Brosmer. But because Minnesota was able to be in the same realm, guess what? Now you have one of the best Gopher quarterbacks that we've seen in the modern era. At least that's the way he's playing right now. Is there anything I might have missed here, boys?
No, I think that's good. I didn't expect it to turn into this thing. I just wanted to make a point that, like, hey, Brosmer's here in this new era, but in large part, like, we solved a problem.
Max Brosmer, heck, Ethan Robinson.
Yeah, there you go.
Another good example there.
Yeah.
Like, and especially, like, I think about the offensive line for next year. I mean, you're losing your NFL left tackle. You got Quinn Carroll leaving. You got Tyler Cooper leaving. I'd love for Minnesota to be able to go land an impactful transfer lineman.
Yeah.
Derek, can you confirm probably the most highly priced thing on the NIL market is an impactful offensive lineman? Would you potentially agree?
Yeah, it's certainly up there. It's all supply and demand. So you look at the supply of good, productive offensive and defensive linemen, and it's low. It's, you know, across the country. So it's the coaching staff has to really get creative and get, you know, do their, put in their work to try and find guys, you know, down, whether it's down to 1AA or group of five or somebody who's not a good fit and another power four. That's another, I think, positive thing about this, you know, transfer NIL era is players who don't fit well at a certain team, they can go find another team they fit better with. And I think that's good. Why would you want a player that doesn't fit well? So yeah, there, that's, that is, the priorities and, you know, where, what to fill in and who to support and retain. That's all right in front of you. It's just having the resources to be able to do it. And, you know, you mentioned something, this will be the last thing I'll say, but being able to be competitive is the key. And people often mistake thinking that whoever's the highest bidder or that this is a bidding war. And I know the media likes to play it off that way, especially in the very large, high profile recruits. That's really not what goes on. I can tell you firsthand, it's being able to competitively support. So then the athlete can decide, okay, I know I'm going to get competitive support NIL wise. Now, where's the best fit for me with which coaching staff do I like? What scheme do I like? Which conference do I want to be in? It's those things that become the factor when the NIL support is basically matched or in the realm of competitiveness.
Yeah, not to mention like what school is a good fit for me, what degree am I seeking? Like there's all sorts
geography.
Of geography. Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Where do I want to, what part of the country do I want to go to school in? That's all, believe it or not, contrary to I think what's the popular opinion now, those are all still big factors.
Okay, yeah, we should also we got sidetracked here for a little bit, but we should get back into making sure that we talk about the offense. We talked about the pass catchers. One other thing I just wanted to hit on with the pass catchers in general, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Ryan, but I feel like we are starting to see these guys, being they've repped this enough now, starting to make some more contested catches. I specifically think of the situation where Nick Kallerup makes a very good contested catch, you know, when you're trying to get into field goal position in a situation where you just don't do that.
Wrong tight end, but
What did I say? Nick Kallerup? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, Jameson
Gears. Nick Kallerup did have a couple of nice catches.
There you go. He was involved as well. Sure. Yeah, but you're right. It was Jameson Gears. But, you know, that ended up being a big play in a situation that we don't typically see a PJ Fleck-led team go and try and get a field goal with, I think it was under 30 seconds, right? And they ended
if
up doing it.
If that ball doesn't go out of bounds on the kickoff,
yeah.
I fully believe that they would have just fielded it out.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the discussion in the headset from what Fleck described afterwards was, okay, the ball went out of bounds. Minnesota gets it at the 35. I think there's 28 seconds left on the clock. So they went to their two-minute offense. And Max Brosmer talked about this after the game, too. They went to the two-minute offense, and they're able to connect on that seam shot to Jameson Gears, which, I mean, that's the Jameson Gears I thought I was going to see more consistently throughout the year. Now, he's been a little bit more up and down. He's an inexperienced player. But
also banged up.
He's also been banged up, yep. But I'm curious to see if maybe he gets a larger role in this passing game and they're able to go get points because of it. I also think even the emergence of Elijah Spencer, where last season Elijah Spencer comes over from Charlotte, but he only gets 9 receptions for 65 yards. And everybody, including myself, was like, what the heck happened? And then from talking with Daniel Jackson, Max Brosmer, Greg Harbaugh, PJ Fleck, it really seems like Spencer... And even Spencer talked about this before the season, just in terms of taking it seriously with everything, where he talked about at Charlotte, you didn't have to necessarily bring it every day to the weight room and the practice room and with your preparation, and you could still go out and be the top guy. And that was the biggest difference he noted between the Conference USA and the Big Ten was he's got to bring it every day. And now he's seeing the... You know, he's reaping the rewards of that with 3 touchdowns in his last 2 games. He has more than tripled his receptions from last year. He's 6X in receiving yards as well. Him stepping up alongside Darius Taylor as kind of the 2A and 2B options in the passing game has really given defenses something to kind of look into because not only is it you have an outside receiver in Daniel Jackson, you've got Elijah Spencer in the slot, who can hurt you. And then you've also got Darius Taylor as a check down out of the backfield, which after another 5 receptions in this game, Darius Taylor remains 2nd in all of Power 4 football in running back receptions. He continues to lead the Big Ten in all running back receptions. He's 15th overall in the Big Ten in receptions, by the way. Like, he has been really good in that area.
Yeah, sneaky stat there.
Well, if there's anything I'm good for, it's numbers.
I got one later, so not on offense and defense.
I think if we're going to switch to the run game, though, I want to throw this to Derek. I will say this about the Minnesota offensive line, and I know that there's a lot of people who are tired of me ragging on them. They are a good pass-blocking offensive line for the most part, because if you want to look at the success of Max Brosmer, Max Brosmer has only been sacked 4 times in his last 3 games. Like, they are a good pass-blocking offensive line. I think that's on, like, 100 dropbacks, too. He was not sacked in this game. Now, he navigated through some pressure in the pocket, but they just continue to struggle with run-fit execution. Now, that second quarter, we're clearly – I've seen enough Gopher football in my life with P.J. Fleck to know he got on the headset and said, we're going to run the ball, and then Maryland just starts sending run blitzes off the edge. But the overall statistics with the run game, Derek, look fine, where Darius Taylor, Marcus Major, Jordan Newbin, your 3 starting tailbacks, go for 98 yards on 23 carries. That's like 4.5 per. That's fine. But you take out the 51-yard run, which I will give the offensive line credit on that one.
Good.
It was all well-designed, well-executed. They were combo blocks to the second level. I want to shout out Kenrick Lanier, who's 30 yards down the field holding his block that allows Taylor to get into the end zone. But then you have the other 95% of runs, Derek, that go for 2 yards per carry. For whatever reason, and Mike Locksley even talked about it afterwards. Now, this is a very Dan Barrero question, so I apologize. Mike Locksley said after the game, we weren't going to let them run the football. My question to you is, how is this possibly the mindset of opposing football coaches in the year of our Lord 2024 when watching this Minnesota offense? I do not understand it. You're an elite football mind. What's going on in the run game, especially against Maryland?
Yeah, so a prediction maybe we can talk about later is I think this is the game that changes future. I mean, it was that good on the passing game that I think the game plan for future opponents is going to change, and I can articulate on that. But in this game, Ryan, actually, when I looked at the film, I was surprised. I did not think the offensive line, the five, did as bad as we might think in running the ball. And here's why. Maryland brought a lot of edge pressure. Their strategy seemed to be in stopping the run. They knew that Minnesota's best runs were outside in mid zone. So they wanted to take that away. They knew Minnesota had struggled to run inside zone. So they said, we're going to bring a nickel. We're going to actually bring a secondary player from the edge. If we determine pre-snap that we think this is a good running down situation, formation, whatever, we're going to bring edge pressure. And they did get a lot of pressure. That's most of their TFLs came off of the edge. So I actually didn't think the offensive line was as bad in this game. I thought they were pretty good. And on those runs that you talked about, there were a few, including the Darius touchdown, but a few good running plays in terms of outcome. They were able to cut inside of that edge pressure and get upfield and get north and south. That's where they found success. So I'm not here declaring that things have turned around. I'm not saying that they're now a good zone run blocking team, but I just wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. Now, one thing I would say, as well as the game plan has been, as good as they've done calling plays, the one thing I'd like to see them change is they're getting a little bit predictable in their run formations and motions and such. So if you see, I guess I'm not going to go into what that is. I don't want to give that away. But if there are certain things that if you look at, you can see and anticipate that it's going to be a run. And I think the defenses are picking up on that. So what I'd like to see is I'd like to see them do more running out of their 4 wide receiver sets and their spread sets, because I think there's an opportunity to gain some yards there. Now, they're throwing those short passes, and in many cases, those are effectively run plays. So they're having some success there. But overall, again, I know the numbers are the numbers, Ryan, so you're right. 90% of their runs did not result in good outcomes, but I think mainly it was from edge pressure. And so, yeah, and I think that's going to change, because I think the defenses are going to scheme differently going forward.
I'm going to be very curious now. Tyler Cooper got banged up in this game, Minnesota's left guard, and that's where you saw the pride of Tracy, Minnesota, Tony Nelson, come in for 20-plus snaps. We'll see if that's something that lingers into the next game, but – It is interesting for you to note that you would have think that if there would have been tells for this run game, that they would have seen it off the bye week. Now, we'll see if that continues to evolve and change throughout November. But I will just continue to say, I don't understand why seemingly every opposing head coach's press conference afterwards is, we weren't going to let them run the ball. I mean, it's been that way since September. Now, I understand that the 7 years prior of PJ Fleck was, they were going to run the ball. This 2024 offense is not about that. This thing where it doesn't revolve around the running back this year, it revolves around 16. So I will be very curious next week for an Illinois defense and an Illinois staff that I think we all very much respect in Brett Bielema. There's a reason Brett Bielema is 10-0 against your Golden Gophers in his time as a Wisconsin and Illinois head coach. But it is just fascinating to me that it continues to come out of head coaches' mouths on the other side, and we weren't going to let them run the ball. It's like we haven't seen outside of like the USC game where they've been able to run the ball pretty consistently. So it's something to where I don't exactly understand it, but I'm also not a head football coach.
Yeah, I think it goes back to identity, right? PJ's teams have always had an identity. If you look at the breakdown in plays, on the offensive side, there were 34 passes. There were 29 runs still, even with all the success that they're having in the passing game and the limited amount of success they had in the run game. You know, if you eliminate, like you said, Ryan, if you eliminate that 51-yarder, and especially on early downs, if you look at the early downs situationally, the Gophers ran, 25 passes and 24 runs. Now, us having followed the team for years, like, that's a drastic increase in throws relative to the run, but you got to stop something, right? And maybe that's something they feel they can stop. And I think that Derek, to your point, I don't know that Maryland did this schematically so much, but I think that they're definitely trying to take away the run and trying to take away Darius Taylor as much as they can. They just didn't do a good job of taking him out of the passing game. So you can't take away everything as a defense.
The last thing I want to note here is the third down stuff.
Sure.
Last year, Minnesota was terrible on third down. They were third worst in the conference against Big Ten opponents. They converted 30% of third downs. Tough to sustain drives that way. Mm-hmm. Well, after a 9-for-13 third down performance against Maryland, your Golden Gophers are now fourth in the Big Ten against Big Ten opponents, as they are converting 47.6% of their third downs. You want to know why one of the biggest reasons why the Gophers continue to sustain drives, are able to put up points? Turns out when you can continue to march down the field on third down, I mean, look, they're up 18. Look, you're the math guy in this regard. What are they up, like 60%-ish then, if they're up from 30 to 48?
Yeah.
Year over year, something like that. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. And it turns out having a quarterback that's accurate on third down, it's a good thing for Minnesota.
And in this one, Ryan, third down, particularly third and long, those were the few plays that Maryland did run zone, and they looked really bad running zone, and Max is really good against zone.
Yeah.
So those two things equaled, I think, contributed to that incredibly high success rate on third down.
Well, look at the first three down. I got this. I promise I've talked before. The first three third downs of the game for Minnesota's offense. It's a 3rd and 9, 3rd and 8, and 3rd and 7. Brosmer to Elijah Spencer for 13 yards. Brosmer to Daniel Jackson for 10. Brosmer to Lamecki Brockington. Three different receivers, 3 3rd and long conversions. That is what we like to call the Max Brosmer effect.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's catch a quick break. We'll come back, talk defense, special teams, and maybe work in some Big Ten play. Ryan, Home Field Apparel is supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio again in 2024. And Ryan, I hope that you ask all of the players that were wearing the Spin Your Head Goldie Gopher Home Field Apparel licensed vintage, incredibly comfortable t-shirt. I saw Daniel Jackson, I saw Max Brosmer, and I'm pretty sure I saw Elijah Spencer all with that shirt on. I hope that you ask them how comfortable and wonderful that shirt was.
I don't want to ask them that. I want to ask them if they used promo code GG24 at checkout to save 15% off, because there is a new Spin Your Head Gopher t-shirt. To your point, Luke, all of the players were wearing it afterwards. Look, if the players are wearing it, you know it's good. You know it's comfortable. And Luke, to that point, I had a couple of people come up to me on Oak Street. They're wearing home field apparel and they say, hey, where do you think I got this from? People are finally starting to listen to the good news, Mr. Luke Buehr, and that would be the comfortable, unique Gopher gear at homefieldapparel.com, including this new Spin Your Head Goldie Tee. So if you want to check it out, what do you have to do? You go to homefieldapparel.com, find Minnesota, get the checkout. What should you do? You should use promo code GG, the numbers 24, and you'll get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG24 to get 15% off your first order.
Ryan, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group has been supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio for a couple of years, but more importantly, they are supporting Dinkytown athletes and giving a portion of the commission that they receive back to Dinkytown athletes and to the sport of their choice for the buyer or seller that works with them. I think more importantly, Ryan, this is a experienced real estate group that has a number of experienced agents that can cover the entire state of Minnesota. I think more importantly too, Ryan, is they've been getting over asking price and they're moving these houses quickly if you're buying or selling. They're just a great team to work with and it's a great way to support Gopher Sports.
100%. And as this real estate market becomes more attainable for now buyers and sellers and you're thinking about entering the real estate space, I get it as someone who has bought a house here in the last 5 years. It's scary. I don't know what I'm doing and that's why if you don't have a realtor that you trust, I want you to go to teamdinkytown.com, check it out, or just give them a call. They'd love to talk to you. 612-250-8562.
All right, let's talk about when the Gophers were on defense. On the day, they give up a total of 23 points. In the first quarter, absolutely nothing. They gave up 10 in the second, and I think it's worth noting they kind of got that late touchdown. Which maybe looked like Maryland could maybe squeak their way back in. But I think the thing to note, Ryan, which you noted ahead of this game, was that Billy Edwards was playing incredibly well, and they were able to make him incredibly uncomfortable. And he threw two picks. They won the turnover margin. But more importantly, he just looked uncomfortable. You know, he definitely had some incredible athletes on the outside. There's no denying, how good Ty Felton was, or even that Octavian Smith. He looked really good. And then I think it was on this defense. Maybe the stats don't bear it out, but they were able to get pressure, maybe not getting the TFLs and the sacks, but they were getting pressure, and that was the difference.
That's why I will die on the hill of sacks are not any way an indicator of how much pressure there was on the quarterback. Because if you look at after 60 minutes of play, the Gopher defense has two tackles for loss, no sacks, and you're thinking to yourself, boy, Billy Edwards must have lit them boys up. He completed 54% of his passes with no passing touchdowns and two picks. Why? Because Minnesota had 23 hurries, 8 quarterback hits. And from that opening drive, they consistently got pressure on him. And that's the thing we always talk about on this podcast. If you can get pressure or even hit a quarterback early in the game, 90% of college football quarterbacks will be off their mark. They will be sporadic. And Billy Edwards was immune to it because they got the early pressure on him. Or even on that third series where Justin Wally gets the pick six, miscommunication on the outside. Wally trusts his instincts. The moment that Edwards plants his back foot, he drives on the ball and is able to get the pick six. Coy Parrish gets his Big Ten leading fifth interception. Why? Anthony Smith drives the left guard into the lap of the quarterback to where when he steps up to release it, he's got a guard in his face, gets hit as he's thrown by his own guard because of Anthony Smith. The ball sails, and who else but the pride of Esko is sitting right there for the overthrow. But to your point, Luke, they got pressure on Edwards the entire game, and that's why he was sporadic as he was. He'd put together a couple of plays in a row, but then he would miss a throw. And you think, how does he miss that?
Yeah,
it's because the clock in his head was sped up because he doesn't want to get hit. He doesn't want to get pressure. But even from that first quarter on, I mean, Minnesota was able to get healthy in this game with Aiden Goosby returning, Kerry Brown returning, Maverick Baranowski, Jalen Logan Redding. I mean, I could talk about all four of those guys in the first quarter alone, where first drive of the game for Maryland, they go for it on fourth and short. Minnesota sends a run blitz where Maverick Baranowski takes up two offensive linemen that allows Kerry Brown to knife in behind him and make a nice a tackle in the hole to get a turnover on downs. The second drive for Maryland ends in a punt. Why? Because Jalen Logan Redding beats a guard, gets a holding call. Second and 20, that Maryland offense can't recover. And then we're talking about Aiden Goosby. I understand that Seven has been much maligned in the past, but I think people need to understand he is playing really well right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is the third straight game in which he's played and which Pro Football Focus has assigned him an 80-plus grade in tackling. Like, that is elite-level tackling, which if you can be a great tackler and you can make sure that that gain is only 6 yards instead of 76 yards, that's going to be a really good thing for this defense. Now, the thing I struggle with, Luke, and I think a lot of people are as well, and Derek has had to explain this to me a couple of different times now, and I think I want to give him the floor again, is this defense is just so philosophically different than what I'm used to watching. What do I mean by that? I'm used to watching Joe Rossi of bend, don't break, very vanilla, keep everything in front. Derek, that can't be any further from the truth now that Corey Heatherman is running this defense, and that's where they have forced the most amount of takeaways of any Big Ten team. And then you'll see them go through stretches like they did in the fourth quarter where, look, I'm not one to tell you. I don't know how much of it was they were up 30 points, but the starters were on the field, and they gave up 12 yards per play in the fourth quarter and two touchdowns. But I think, Derek, the thing I want you to explain to me and the listeners again is, with the style of defense that Heatherman now runs, defining success is a little bit different than what we're used to seeing in years past. I know you and I talked about it last night, but could you give people kind of a glimpse of what I'm trying to ask you?
Yeah, so I think that the approach, which is, I think you're right, is about completely opposite from what Joe Rossi's defense is, which was definitely bend, don't break, had a higher a floor, I'll call it, but maybe a lower ceiling. So the spread and disparity of play on defense was much narrower. With a higher pressure, more chaos style defense that the Gophers are calling now, what you're basically doing is you're betting you're going to give up the tendency to, you're going to give up the likelihood of giving more chunk plays in exchange for more minus plays and turnovers. Mm-hmm. So at times the floor can be lower because you're going to give up chunk plays. You may give up big touchdowns because when you call a pressure or a high risk defensive play call pre-snap, if they have the right play call or if they execute that, it could be a touchdown or it could be a chunk play. On the other side of the coin, why you're willing to do that is you're betting that you can create with that high pressure defense and aggressive play calling. You're willing to bet that you're going to either create a turnover or you're going to create a couple of big minus plays, a big sack, a big, you know, maybe a you know, something, a big TFL, something that puts the offense in a second and 18 or second and 16, and you're betting that that's going to kill the drive. So drives in the case of this defense are ended because of a turnover or a big minus play. Whereas, and even, you know, you brought up Ryan too, the holding call. That's another good example of when you call a high pressure defense, you're theoretically, if the officials call it, you're going to pick up more big holding calls and things like that. And that also puts the offense in a position where they can't convert. So the philosophy is different, and it's something I think we're all getting used to. And I think, Ryan, that's what you're trying to say is we'd like it to be perfect. And we'd like to say, boy, there were a number of, you know, third and mediums that we gave up a chunk play, or a number of, you know, plays where they extended the play and got a big play on us. And you don't like seeing those chunk plays. You want everything to be kept in front of you. But I think that's just, that's the trade-off. You're going to see some of that in exchange for the turnovers and minus plays.
Yeah. Can I add something to this? Because I think this was my sneaky stat that reinforces your guys' conversation and point about how this defense is different. So if you look at the total EPA, so what's EPA real quick for those that maybe aren't familiar with some of the advanced metrics, EPA is expected points added. It's a way of quantifying, you know, how a given player or team, would be able to add points over the aggregate of an entire season, right? Or of an entire game. So if you look at the offensive EPA for Maryland, it was 9.08. If you look at the offensive EPA for Minnesota, Minnesota, it was 9.88. And you're thinking to yourself, like, well, this doesn't bear out in the scoreboard, right? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So you got to dig a little bit deeper. Now, where you got to dig deeper is in the explosive plays. Now, Game on Paper, which is one that I like, Ryan, you know this very well. They basically define explosive plays as a passing play with an EPA over 2.4 and a running play of over 1.8. So on the day, basically, they quantified that Maryland had seven explosive plays and Minnesota only had two. Now, we can argue what really an explosive play is, but if you take that definition and you look at their total EPA without explosive plays, Maryland was a -9.46, where Minnesota was a positive 3.12. So I think part of this is Corey Heatherman, and it's hard to quantify turnovers into this, right? But in general, this points out that you might give up some explosive plays. That doesn't necessarily mean they result into touchdowns and bear out on the scoreboard. But if you're able to get some of those other explosive plays in the form of turnovers on your side, which the Gophers are able to do in this situation, you are then going to be in a very positive situation, which they were on Saturday.
Can I give you a real world example, Luke?
Yeah, for sure.
So the pick, Justin Wally's pick six. Ryan is right. A good play by Justin Wally. He steps in front of the pass. He's playing with his eyes in the backfield, but he would not do that in a bend don't break defense. So
100%.
What that would have been is at best would have been a pass breakup if he was playing normal coverage. What Corey Heatherman called on that play was they showed cover zero pre-snap, so they brought the safeties up, which then got the wide receiver for Maryland to run a stop and go. Now, unfortunately, the quarterback thought he was going to run the stop or the hitch, and that's what he threw. But they showed a cover zero, and on the snap, Aiden Goosby bailed into a traditional cover two. So they showed it, but then he bailed out. Well, he bailed on it, which Justin Wally then knows he has safety help, so he can play the hitch. So he stepped in front of the hitch, picked it off, and ran for a touchdown. So again, if they're playing traditionally, if that's a normal call, and the quarterback sees that it's normal cover two, that's either going to be a completion in the pocket of the cover two, or it's going to be a pass breakup. It's not going to be a pick six. So that's an example where it worked out. And I'm not here to say that there's no downside to this defense, but that's the type of play that this defensive play calling creates.
It's fascinating just to see how much of a change there's been year over year and just simple things like that. And that's where I know if I'm struggling with it, listeners are listening. So I appreciate both of you kind of going in deep with it. I tell you, Minnesota is number one in the Big Ten in takeaways, 17. They're number two in all of college football in interceptions. They have 15 interceptions, one behind James Madison for the college football lead. They just continue to be in the right spot at the right time. They continue to be able to make plays in the backfield. And that's why this game is so funny, boys, is if Minnesota on their garbage time offensive drive doesn't get about 25, 30 yards, Maryland would have won the total yardage. They had 427. The Gophers had 443. And yet you would think, knowing that, boy, this game was close. At no point was it ever close. Now, that's where some of the hidden yards come into play, where you get the turnover on downs early. You get Coy Parrish with a punt return. You get Coy Parrish's interception return, and that's where the offense really benefited from having some of their best field position of the entire season. It is just such a funny game in which, if you were to look at these stats alone, the total yardage or penalties or first downs, third downs, whatever it may be, you would think, boy, this game was really close. And for most of this game, it was 3, 4, even 5 touchdowns at times, which leads me into PJ Fleck in the fourth quarter, where with 10 minutes left, I'm thinking, you're thinking, everyone's thinking, okay, Brosmer got his 300 yards, becomes the first 300-yard passer since Ethan Kaliak-Manis against Wisconsin in 2022. Great. But why is the defense continually on the field there? Now, we asked the head coach after the game, which I know that some fans think that the media doesn't ask the quote-unquote tough questions, which, yeah, you know us. We hate to ask anything of the head football coach, but Fleck's rationale was this. His team, in his eyes, hadn't played 60 minutes of football. And he cited one of the examples after the game of 2023 Illinois, where that's one that sticks with them still, with the way that the defense just absolutely fell apart when the backup quarterback came in on that final drive. And he was trying to prove to his defense, you need to play for 60 minutes. You've played for 45, but I'm keeping you in the game to try and make a point to you. Well, how'd that go? Where Ja Joyner gets banged up, Peyton Goosby gets banged up, you give up 2 touchdowns, 12 yards per play. Now, I'm not one to tell you, and I don't think any of the three of us would tell you, where was their mind at, these defensive players? You're up 48 to, you're up 28 points. I mean, are you really trying to bring it? Is Heatherman really trying to bring it? I don't know. But that was the rationale there, was Fleck wanted to keep in his defense to say, play 60 minutes. Now, I would have benched them. That's what I would have done, because the Ja Joyner, Aiden Goosby thing, now it sounds like both of them are fine and should be ready to go for Illinois. But, Derek, what were your thoughts and feelings? And now that I've explained what the head coach said after the game, what's your Monday morning quarterback take?
It's PJ Fleck's team. He can do what he wants. I understand that line of thinking, but I don't agree with it. I think in this era of college football, and I'm not going to get on that soapbox again, but the short of it is depth everywhere has become thin. Players with the transfer portal, the depth is filtering down. And so I think there needs to be, I think they need to reassess how you're protecting those starters from injury. And there are definitely going to be the overwhelming majority of games. You're going to need guys to play. We've seen the defensive line. You've called out the snap counts, Ryan, that particularly defensive tackle, they're just playing insane amounts of snaps because they don't have the depth at this point. They haven't developed to where it needs to be. I'm not trying to throw shade at the backups. They're just not quite there yet. So they've had to play high snap counts. So I just think when you get an opportunity to protect your starters from injury, I think you take it. So if it were me, I would have probably somewhere around the 7 minute mark, gotten the starters out of there. So, I didn't agree. And this is regardless of an injury happening or not. I just think you have an opportunity. The other thing too, is you have in the NFL, you have such a smaller roster size. In college football, you've got 85 scholarships, you've got walk-ons, you've got home games, you got over 100 players. Like, there's just no read. Just get some other guys in there.
I think the only thing I was going to add to this is maybe he referred to or referenced this, Ryan, but I wonder if he had some PTSD from some of the previous games, especially from last year. And the situation is just not the same. But, you have the backup quarterback come in and it's 6 plays, 75 yards, touchdown, right? Two minutes and 58 seconds off the clock. And I got to imagine that frustrated him. I thought, though, when they missed the 2-point conversion, they'll make the change here, and then they don't, right? I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with the situation. I'm glad. I think the one thing worth noting as well is when they did bring in offensive substitutions, they did not go with Drake Lindsey. Very clear they're trying to probably preserve a red shirt.
Which is fascinating to me in the portal era, yeah. Where I would argue, what do red shirts matter anymore?
I know.
But yep. From what I understand, that was their entire rationale.
That's the only justification, yeah.
If Brosmer gets hurt going forward, they want to be able to preserve Lindsey's red shirt, which then I would say, well, then why did Drake Lindsey play in some of the non-conference games if that was going to be the thought process? Because Drake Lindsey has been the quarterback too since essentially January. So I would also agree with Derek in that Minnesota is so thin defensively, where if Ja Joyner wouldn't have been okay, that's just inexcusable. Well, I think about defensive tackle. They are incredibly thin. They only trust Devin Eastern and Jalen Logan Redding, which don't get me started about. They have 21 scholarship defensive linemen, and they only play 7-ish consistently. Like, what is the theoretical value then of the double-digit other guys who can't find snaps, especially some of the upperclassmen there, but that's here nor there.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if Cody Lindenberg were to have gotten hurt there. He is their best player at linebacker, and he put it together another good game. I think he was Pro Football Focus's highest-graded Gopher on defense. Imagine Cody Lindenberg goes down up 30 points. What are you doing? Or Justin Wally or Ethan Robinson, like, I just do not agree that the risk is worth the reward, because you are so paper thin in so many spots defensively that you can't afford it.
Maybe this is a bad example because I can't remember, but did Aiden Goosby play in the Iowa game? I think he was out, right?
I will look.
Okay. Well, maybe a bad example, but I'll just say I'm not trying to suggest that this would have changed the outcome. But as well as Aiden Goodsby has been tackling, you kind of wonder to yourself, like, man, if they would have had him in that Iowa game, assuming my memory is correct, like, could he have made a minor difference?
He did not play in that Iowa game.
You know, like that's the kind of depth question you ask yourself.
So. Which I also want to say about the safety room. I think I talked about it on Gopher Football Sunday, but the job that Danny Collins has done with that safety room cannot be understated right now.
Yep. Kerry Brown, yeah. Like,
you have a core of Coy Parrish, Kerry Brown, both are freshmen.
Yeah.
And then Aiden Goosby is a sophomore. Like, my biggest question mark on the entire team, and I wrote about this, talked about this, smoke signals everywhere, was safety. You lost Tyler Newbin, who played thousands of snaps. Your strong safeties of Darius Green and Aiden Goosby weren't good last year. And I'm sitting here thinking, boy, it's going to be rough. But the steps forward that we've seen from Kerry Brown, who played well again in this game, Aiden Goosby, who I mentioned earlier, has had three straight tackling performances of over 80-plus grades from PFF. Essentially, he has been as sure of a tackler on the Gopher defense in the month of October as you've seen. That is a giant step forward from him. And then who can forget about the pride of Esco, who now plays 40, 50 snaps a game. That is a young trio that you can build around that'll all be here next year, hopefully, potentially the year after. I mean, what Danny Collins has done with those three guys. And, oh, by the way, on the rewatch, did we see a little Coleman Bryson playing Will linebacker for a couple of snaps? Oh boy, Luke Buehr, maybe they do listen to the podcast after all.
All right.
That young trio it's tough to not be excited about the future of that position going forward.
I just find the irony of this conversation and just like our preseason conversations where the strength's going to be the offensive.
We know nothing and know everything at the same time.
The strength's going to be the offensive line, probably the glaring weakness. The weakness is going to be the safety room, one of the strengths, and the defensive line has played well. It just doesn't have the depth we maybe thought.
That's
funny.
The part about this podcast, Luke, is then we can go back. People can call us out on it, and I'm not afraid to say I am wrong all
this
the time.
This is not a Hank Ekpe level miss by you.
Look, I hate that I can't go a week of my entire life without a Hank Ekpe or Muhammad Ibrahim being thrown at me, but that's the nature of this gig. I'll say again, I am wrong all the time. I'll be wrong again.
Yes, 100%.
But, you know, being willing to adapt, whether you're a football team or whether you have a bad take in the media, accountability, people. I mean, I understand that we try our best. I certainly do. I'm entrenched in this thing every single day, and I always get things wrong, so... But it's just fascinating to kind of see the evolution of this defense from philosophy, from Rossi to Heatherman, to what the strengths and weaknesses are now that we have 8 games worth of data. I would just say, I think the defense played largely fine. It's just I have to get used to it's not linear with this defense, the way it's so up and down, because the ups are so up and the downs are 12 yards per play in a quarter. But that's the nature of the beast now that Corey Heatherman's running this thing.
Okay, quickly, let's touch a little bit of special teams. I'm just going to probably take this because I don't think there's a ton to talk about here. Dragan Kesich had a clean slate, and I think in large part it was the fact that he had kicks that were much closer. They weren't 50-yarders. I think one of the 30-yarders that he hit probably would have missed significantly wide right if it was 50 yards.
The 40 yarder, which was the first one.
Yeah, that's maybe the one I'm referring to.
I think he misses, but
yeah.
To your point, because they were a little bit closer, he gets the boost of confidence, and then he hits the second one before halftime, which, Luke, we talked about it on the preview episode. The biggest thing for special teams not to just be a giant L, which they were at negative 25 points added to their team coming into this game, was if Dragan Kesich can start to figure it out. I don't care how it gets through the uprights. It got through the uprights both times. So good on him.
Yeah, good on him. And in general, Coy Parrish continues to be a real value add in the punt return game, his fearlessness there and just finding ways to make yards. He's been an awesome revelation there, and it changes the dynamic. It helps out the offense so much, and you got to give the offense credit too to get into position where they can get Dragan into a position to have a closer field goal. All in all, I don't think the special teams hurt you in this game at all. You guys want to talk a little Big Ten and then we'll close it out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Rutgers loses 20-42 at USC. So obviously two common opponents here. And Rutgers moves to 4-4, 1-4 in Big Ten. USC moves to 4-4, 2-4 in Big Ten. Ethan struggles again. The stats are a little bit misleading. He was 27-47 for 313. If you just see the 313, you wonder, wow, this is pretty good. But in this one, guys, I think USC was just too much for Rutgers. What are your guys' thoughts?
I think that what I would be looking closely at as the Gophers scout Rutgers for their future matchup is the last 2 weeks, the defenses have been able to stop Manungai at running back. I know that Ethan struggled, and I know that's been the talker for sure. But before the previous two games, Manungai looked like the second, the reincarnation of Mo Ibrahim. I mean, he was at times just unstoppable in that RPO offense. So I don't know whether game script played a big factor in that versus USC, where they were able to get up and essentially nullified, Rutgers running game. But that's a huge key. If I'm Corey Heatherman and looking at that, is what have they done the last 2 weeks to stop him? Because it seems like when they're able to slow him down, it just hasn't been there for Ethan in the passing game at Rutgers.
Manungai is just so good, and I believe he left this game late with a concussion. Now Rutgers gets a bye week to prepare for Minnesota, which death taxes, and Kirk Shiraka off a bye week, and I'll continue to say I don't care what PJ Fleck tells me to my face that Monday before Rutgers. This game isn't just another game for either staff. It's Ethan versus his old team. It's Kirk Shiraka and versus his mentor and Greg Harbaugh. It's Corey Heatherman against his mentor, Joe Harris-Simiak. It's PJ Fleck versus his mentor and Greg Schiano. Both staffs are going to want this thing more than you can imagine, because it just means a little bit more because we're all humans. But with Ethan, I didn't think Ethan particularly played. I mean, Ethan played fine.
He played fine. It's just not efficient, right?
Yeah. If that's the thing with Ethan, though, is if you ask Ethan to throw, I think Ethan dropped back to pass 56 times against USC. That is never going to be a recipe for success for whoever team that is. It's just 56 Ethan dropbacks. There's going to be some throws or some decisions where it's like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But if Rutgers can't figure this thing off the bye week, now I will say they were incredibly banged up, and I'm going to assume off the bye week they're going to get healthier, especially defensively, which is what has been plaguing them. But I talked about coming into the stretch, Luke. Minnesota needs to go 2-1 in this game between these games between the bye. They're already 1-0 against Maryland. Now you get to go face a ranked Illinois team, who we'll talk about next, and then Rutgers. Got to be 2-1 here if you're going to be getting to a pretty good bowl game.
Yeah. So Illinois goes to Eugene, loses. They did outscore Oregon in the second half, but it was that first
half. Very good, Tim Brewster.
Thank you. But that first half really was the difference. They came up 35 points in the first half. They lost 38-9. Oregon just too much. Oregon, continues to be undefeated. Illinois goes to 3-2 in the conference, 6-2 overall.
Yeah, Luke Altmyer is going to be an interesting case to kind of monitor coming into this game, because he played exceptionally well for the early part of the Big Ten slate against Nebraska, Penn State, Purdue. I mean, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. And now the last couple of weeks against Michigan and Oregon, he's completing less than 50% of his passes. He's been under pressure a lot. Their running game has just completely gone away. I know that their star receiver, Pat Bryant, left this game late with potentially a concussion. He is an NFL type of receiver. They have two of them. Him and Franklin are really, really good. This is a good Illinois team. Yeah, they went into Oregon and got slapped in the face down 35-3 at halftime, but I'd argue there might not be a better team in America right now than Oregon, especially in Eugene. So yeah. I think the injury report is going to be huge to monitor this week. And Brett Bielema actually gives injury updates, which what a theory, Minnesota. What a theory. But Derek, what do you think about Illinois? Because I think we all can agree they're one of the best coaching staffs in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very underrated staff. They can win different ways, which is always I think that's a hat tip to the coaching staff. From what I've seen of Illinois this year, I guess my advice would be to not get into a game of attrition with them. They're going to do that better than you in terms of playing ball control, hard nose, limiting possessions. They're going to do that better. I think that where they've struggled is when teams have tried to outscore them. So if I'm Minnesota, that's my approach is, and I guess that would probably be mostly with the passing game, is try and outscore Illinois, because I don't think they're as adept at, you know, a race to 40 points or what have you. So that's my takeaway. And I totally agree. That was going to be another point, what you talked about, Ryan, which was Luke Altemeyer is going to be an interesting study, because he looked incredibly good for the very underrated, I think, for the first few games. But that's seemingly I don't know if it's pressure or the lack of running game, but that's kind of fizzled a little bit in the last couple of games.
Luke, I would finally mention that there is a game time for this one. It got announced late on Saturday night. It is an 11 a.m. kickoff in Champaign on Luke's favorite TV network, Fox Sports 1.
Yeah, I'm stoked. Okay, Penn State rolls at Wisconsin. They were down 10-7. They lost Aller in this game, but still managed to score 21 points in the second half to steal this one in Madison. A pick six helps a lot there. I will say Wisconsin got absolutely jobbed on a call on a kickoff where they got called for a holding, and the guy just got their own blocker basically got ran over. All in all, this Penn State obviously had some depth even at quarterback, made enough plays, and Locke just wasn't probably good enough, and you know, the pick six really hurt him.
I think it's just about Braden Locke makes one decision a game where it's just like, what are you doing? And that's where Wisconsin's number two quarterback, Braden Locke, throws the pick six. Penn State's number two comes in the second half, and he goes 11-13 for 98 yards. I mean, they run the ball for over 6 yards a carry. It just seems like with Wisconsin, and they had been playing white hot coming into this thing, when they have an opportunity under Luke Fickell to make a statement, and they had, I mean, you can't ask for a better scenario. You're up 10-7 on the number three team in the country, and their star quarterback gets knocked out. And then what's your counterpunch in the second half? 21-3 is your deficit, and you lose. Derek, what'd you think?
Yeah, I think I watched Wisconsin a few times this year, and probably the most inconsistent offense I've seen. And by that is not entirely negative. When they're on, they're really on. I mean, they're humming, but they just, and then at other times they just look absolutely clunky. And I don't know if that's a symptom of transitioning to a new scheme. We've talked about that. Luke and I have talked about that a lot, where they're coming from this, you know, downhill running play action pass team to now they're spreading it out more at times. They're trying to find big plays.
Dairy raid to you, Derek.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It again, at times it's looked really good. At other times it's looked just very discombobulated. So I kind of don't know what you're going to get from Wisconsin on any given day or any given half. On the flip side, I would say Penn State's been interesting in that also a lot of talent there, obviously very highly ranked. They're stacking up wins, but they're not showing the consistency. They're able to manufacture some big plays. They've got a tremendous tight end. They've been able to find a lot in the passing game. Running hasn't been consistent. They're not exactly a juggernaut, but they come up with enough big plays and they have enough talent to get those wins. But it doesn't look like a machine necessarily. So I think they're not infallible either.
Yeah, just a couple comments before we move on. Wisconsin, in this game and in other games, has struggled with some drops. And then that obviously makes Locke's percentage look worse. In Penn State, I will be very interested to see. I think that, to your point, Derek, they have a very good tight end, but they have multiple good tight ends. And curious to see how Minnesota is going to be able to handle that. Next game, Nebraska hangs tight with Ohio State, but still can't get over the threshold and get that elusive ranked win. This one would have been
the officiating in that game on both sides, Luke.
It was bad.
Oh my God, it was terrible.
Yeah, 21-17. Ohio State moves to 3-1. Nebraska moves to 2-3 in the Big Ten, 6-3 overall. It wasn't a pretty game for anyone. It was especially not a pretty game for the officials. But yeah, any other comments from you guys?
Ohio State looks like a team that can be beaten. Now, I think Nebraska fans would tell you they got some help from the officiating. I think Ohio State fans, especially on a late targeting call, which I didn't quite understand how it was targeting. If that's targeting, how do you play football? But they think they got job. Ryan Day was losing his mind. Matt Rhule was losing his mind. But Ohio State is human, just like Penn State is. And that's the number 3 and 4 team in the country, Derek.
Yeah, I think that game was the definition of playing, getting an ugly win for Ohio State, playing really bad and finding a way to win, whether it was partly the officials, I mean, perhaps, but they didn't play well at all. And I think in the Ryan Day era, as much success as they've had, we've seen this at times. There are games where they just don't appear to want to be there, or they're just not in it, and it looks like this. And then there are other games where they have enough talent, and Ryan knows they select, they don't recruit, they stack their team, and when they want to be there, they can hang with anybody. So I think that's what I saw.
All right, Washington loses at Indiana. College game day was there. Indiana showed up.
How about college game day going to the 11 a.m. BTN game, by the way?
Yeah.
Oh, the irony of that, and they're on BTN, is not lost on me, but Luke, I'm not sure that I'm ready for Indiana as a college football playoff team, but it's looking more and more likely.
Yeah, 31-17, Indiana still stays unbeaten. Kudos to Daniel House for him, tagging Indiana going 7-0. I think this was the first game he maybe had them losing. But nope, here they go. They keep rolling. It's going to be fascinating to watch the remainder of this season with them.
All they got to do is not slip up against Michigan State, Michigan, or Purdue. And oh, by the way, if they continue to beat teams, even with, we'll see when Curtis Rourke can get back, that game at Ohio State at the end of the season on November the 23rd, how many touchdowns is Indiana favored by, Derek? I'm all in on Cincinnati right now.
Yeah, it looks like they're headed towards a Big Ten championship game and possibly the college football playoff. Like you said, if they don't slip up in one of those three games, they've been
But Derek, I was told there's no parity in college football. Can you?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to take any more heat for that. So we'll let the results, I guess, speak for themselves. But Indiana's a very systematic team. They run a traditional spread where they really use the entire field horizontally and vertically. They make you defend every piece of turf, and they have the athletes to do that. It looks like they've done a good job bringing in the talent to fit that system. They run that system incredibly well. Even with the starting quarterback going down, they plug in number two and there's a little bit of a drop off, but still, I mean, they're humming along and their fans are certainly enjoying it. They've got a lot of juice down there, and that's a buzzsaw right now. And it's going to take a good effort to knock them off that. And they're, like you said, with their schedule, they're staring down a Big Ten championship game here coming up.
All right, so Northwestern loses at Kinnick Stadium 40-14. Iowa makes.
Are you ready for the Brendan Sullivan era to now begin, Luke?
Yeah,
you've been clamoring for this.
I got a conspiracy theory when we wrap this up, but Brendan Sullivan comes in. They finally bench Cade McNamara. They have a 28-point third quarter, and Iowa rolls.
Well, that's what's lost. Ryan, that's what's lost in this game. This was really close until half and into the third quarter. You look at the score and you say, yep, that's, we expected that. Iowa kind of ran away with it. No, they didn't. I mean, they pulled away big time in the second half, but it was close, Ryan.
It's weird to talk about an Iowa football team that in three different Big Ten games now has scored 30 or more points. They have scored 40 or more in two of their last three. And that's with an inept quarterback. Now, we're going to see if the Brendan Sullivan change is here to stay. The Iowa defense made Northwestern's offense, as inept as it is, looked inept. So they got back to that. But Luke, I want to give you the floor because I know there's at least one Iowa fan that wants to hear this.
Okay, so I got two comments. When we were talking earlier about the defense and how, you know, Minnesota is not a bend but don't break. You know, they might give up some yardage, but they might force turnovers. I think that is, again, one of the reasons that I respect Phil Parker and that Iowa defense so much. They are able to force turnovers, but also keep the clamps down in almost a bend but don't break fashion. They rarely give up explosive plays. And then secondly, to my conspiracy theory, my conspiracy theory started because I saw a tweet of Sullivan giving Pat Fitzgerald a hug, and he was in Iowa gear. And I said, oh no, this is what's going to happen. Ferentz is going to retire after the year. Pat Fitzgerald's going to be hired, and I am going to be miserable. Absolutely miserable.
I want you to know the reason Pat Fitzgerald was there is his son is committed to Iowa as a preferred walk-on, or whatever that version now exists as in 2024, as a quarterback. So he was there with his son on a visit. Now, I think he was wearing whatever his kid's high school
gear is. Well, his wife was wearing Iowa.
His wife was wearing Iowa gear,
okay,
yes.
Okay.
But it'll be interesting because I will also agree with you. I have thought, and I've talked about this, I think this is Kirk Ferentz's last year. Now, wouldn't that be something? That'd be very Iowa to not care about all the crap that happened.
If Beth Getz does this to
Gerald and Northwestern and how that thing went, to then hire him to run the Iowa Hawkeyes, that would be... Derek, what do you think about that one?
No comment.
If Beth Getz does this, like, if it happens, oh, what a dagger. Like, that would be just the best hire in...
Yeah. Iowa fans would just continue to hate their own. I feel proud.
Dude, but he would be so much better there. I totally believe that. Okay. Finally, in-state rivalry, Michigan State loses to Michigan at the Big House, 17-24. A fight ensues, just like what would happen at a family gathering. They often refer to each other as big brother and little brother. The fight broke out, but yeah. I don't know, guys. Michigan State keeps to continue to find a way. Their offense is not pretty by any stretch of the imagination, but Derek, they just keep finding a way.
Yeah, this one was within a score for most of the game. I don't know that Michigan State ever had a lead, Ryan. I don't know if you see that or not, but it was within a touchdown and there were several times where Michigan tried to pull away and Michigan State fought back, which is just so quintessential rivalry, right? You're just not going to blow out the other opponent in a rivalry. And so there were fighting on the field and off the field for sure. But ultimately Michigan was at the very end was able to pull away.
Yeah. Michigan State started hot. They had a lead in the first quarter, especially at the end of the first quarter there, but Michigan had to pull out all the stops in this game. You have Donovan Edwards throwing a touchdown. Your leading rusher is your backup quarterback and Alex Orji, because Davis Warren, they went back to as the guy. Colston Loveland is their best skill position player, a future NFL tight end. Turns out maybe you should feature him. They did, 6 receptions for 67 yards and 2 scores. And then at the end of the game, a nice little brawl between the look, there's a lot of rivalries in this conference. I think Minnesota and Iowa hate each other. Minnesota and Wisconsin hate each other. But if you want to capitalize those words, H-A-T-E, or those letters, Michigan and Michigan State, I think, might take the cake because they are so sick and tired of one another, and you saw it spill over there at the end of the game. But this is a huge game for Michigan just to get them back in the conversation for bowl eligibility. They needed this one.
Yes.
Because their stretch in November, Oregon, Indiana, Northwestern, and Ohio State. Like, you're probably going 1-3 there, and if you didn't win this one, you could have gone from national champions to not even making a bowl. So that's a big win for Sherrone Moore.
All right. I think that'll do it for this episode. I want to thank all of you for listening. It's been a really fun ride to see this team evolve. We're looking forward to the Illinois game, and go Gophers.